going on out there, everybody? And thank y'all all so much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, sitting in here in the studio, and we've just been bitching before the mics come on, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios. A little bit chilly out, but I'm ready to go. I got a new toy I've been playing with. I got a new riser. And I've been jacking around with that. I was planning on...
It's part of a bow, folks, the bow. So we got an archery shoot, but the weather's got us. That's what we're bitching about.
Yeah, so we're not going to be able to go to it because it's going to be canceled. But so I was planning on going down the road. There's an archery shop not too far from here, maybe trying to tune it in down there. I'm not sure yet. Or if I was really cool, I'd have my own workshop with an indoor facility, but I don't. So I have to wait on the weather. So unfortunately, I got a new toy and I can't really play with it as much as I would like to.
I really wished I had an indoor archery range.
Man.
I don't need it to be massive. I just need it big enough for like four of us.
Right? Yeah, I agree.
Just like a small group of us. But one of these days.
I want a workshop, you know, with like that, like you said, with an indoor range. But I also want an area where I can do some woodworking and things like that. Like, I don't really have anything.
Piddle.
I don't have a place to piddle like that at my house.
Just to mess around.
You know, on the last show, we were talking about our intergalactic war we're having with these unknown UFOs.
It's a true story.
Well, I was under the assumption that, you know, because we're America, that we were like 100% accurate. Not true. Just found out that while we shot down four of those mysterious objects, one of the shots missed.
Where did that shot go?
Well, thank you. That was my first question. I'm like, what do you mean they missed?
Because I'm assuming it's not a bullet. It's probably a rocket.
Oh, it was like a $400,000 like AIM-9 or Sparrow or Exocet. I don't know.
Some type of missile. So did it land in the ocean or did it land in somebody's backyard?
They didn't say.
Oh,
and that was my question, is what happened to the missile?
There's been a lot of missiles lost. Like here in the U.S., there's been several. I had looked at a few where they had like literally dropped a nuclear bomb. I want to say it was in Georgia or something.
I remember that. That was back like in the 60s, I think. It fell out, but luckily like it wasn't
armed or
it
whatever.
It wasn't armed, yeah.
I mean, I don't like the fact that you can just easily lose a rocket. Like that just doesn't sound like a banger. But it's probably landed out in the ocean, right?
Well,
more than likely.
No, I think this one was over one of the Great Lakes. So it's probably in the lake.
So it's in the lake. Which might as well be an ocean.
But yeah, but what happens if somebody finds that thing?
Well, they get to keep it.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I mean, what are you talking about?
Did they really miss or did they shoot it and the alien said, like a tractor beam and sucked up our missile?
And just took it with them?
Yeah. And then they said, oh, yeah, we missed.
We missed. Man, I'm going with that.
I don't know.
I'm going with the idea that maybe the aliens took it.
I still think we should be a little more freaked out. Like,
yeah.
I don't really care about who's winning on American Idol or whatever. Like, I need to know what we're shooting at.
And where the rockets are going.
Yeah, where they're coming from. Like, that should be the focus of every news report that comes out.
It is kind of funny that it just, like, we take it. We've been so desensitized.
That's exactly what
it is. That's what's so wild is just how desensitized we all are when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Well, yeah. I understand that. I was just talking to somebody I know that recently had a kid, and I was trying to explain to them that
Whoa, you were just talking to someone you know that recently had a kid. Well, good thing you weren't talking to someone you didn't know that just had a kid.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying, let me get to my story, as I was trying to explain to them that they'll become desensitized because they're at their new parents, so they're, like, worried about everything. And I told them, like, I was that way the first time, but then by the time I hear Luke get hurt. I'm like, it doesn't even faze me. I'm like, is there any blood? Let me look at you. You're fine.
The last, and everybody that's had brothers and sisters and multiple children, you always know it is by the time you get to that last kid, you're like, if the bone's not showing, stop crying.
Yeah, right.
Like that's
but
it,
you remember
right?
your first child, you're like really worried. Like, oh man, something's wrong.
I'm not saying I'm not worried all the time, but you know what it is like you're talking about is you're not near as knee-jerk reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the same thing that's going on with these UFOs and shooting at them and all this crazy stuff.
Well, conspiracy theorists will tell you that the whole reason Hollywood has been making all these darn UFO movies was to desensitize us.
Yes.
And they've been doing this. Has been a cabal for the last 45 years.
And I know that they've also talked about the fact that the reason that they make it where it's always us against them is so we don't invite them in. Which seems very strange. Do they know something we don't, or are they in cahoots with the aliens, and they say all that, so we're afraid of it all, right?
They're definitely in cahoots with the aliens, and they definitely know more than what they're telling us.
In the aliens, in cahoots with the aliens.
Right.
It's madness. Well, speaking of madness, look, we got to talk with Lon not long ago. We went, you know, we talked to Lon all the time, but we actually dropped it where y'all could hear it and get to see all that stuff. It wasn't long after that, Lon sent me this. Fires this email off to me, and he's like, you're going to like this one. Folks, listen to this. It's a small bipedal glimmer man encountered in Beaver, West Virginia.
Okay.
This is what it goes on here to say this. This is talking about this woman in West Virginia recalls the fact that she believes she observed a 7 to 8 inch cloaked glimmer man figure.
So tiny.
Tiny. Listen to this. Says, I recently found your blog and was curious about the glimmer man incidents that you've written about. I had a similar encounter several years ago. I'm curious as to what you think. The date was Thursday, September 8th, 2016. I was on a trip from Northwest Pennsylvania to visit a friend in North Carolina, and I'd been driving for about 5.5 hours when I left Route 64 and drove onto Airport Road and came down to a little town called Beaver, West Virginia. Well, I stopped at the KFC to grab something to eat, and when leaving, I made a right out of the parking lot onto Route 19. I was driving slowly as I hadn't picked up speed from pulling out yet. Because I was driving slowly, I'm sure I would have never noticed this if I had been driving fast. I was approaching some leaves spread across the road when I noticed the leaves were moving, but there was no wind blowing. I slowed down thinking there may be an animal in the leaves and I didn't want to hit it. I was looking really hard because I could see the leaves moving, but I didn't see this animal. Then I could make out a small bipedal figure about 7 or 8 inches tall that seemed to be trying to hide in the leaves. As it tried to get across the road, it looked as if I could see a line of each part of the creature, but it seemed to be cloaked. Kind of like what a chameleon does, but not quite the same. It moved with a ratchet-type movement. It was rather jerky. Now, I don't know if that's what its normal movement was or if this thing was injured. So I was driving at a crawl by this time because I was observing something that was so bizarre and I was trying to make out what it was. I was thinking, what in the world is this thing? Well, it almost looked like a frail stick figure, as I could only make out some of it. I thought maybe it was an emaciated squirrel, but they don't walk on 2 feet, and if it was that skinny, it would be dead and not jerking across the road. And it was not a featherless bird either. It had reached the center line and was attempting to cross the rest of the road when a pickup from the other side came speeding along and just missed it with the driver's side tires. And I saw the leaves being thrown. I don't know if it made it or not, as cars behind me were honking at me to keep moving. I thought about turning around to see if I could find it because, well, that is what I would do for an animal. But this was not an animal that I had ever heard of or that I'd ever seen before. The more I thought about it, I realized that it might have been cloaked and was picking up the color of the leaves to disguise itself. It reminded me of the cloaked alien in the movie Predator. I could see it, but I couldn't make out exactly what it was. And as I tried to rationalize this in my head, I thought maybe it was a reptile or a lizard of some kind, like a chameleon that can turn into different colors on its skin. Or like an octopus can do the same thing, and maybe we've just never seen them to know what they are. So when I arrived at my friend's house that night, I told her about it. She never doubted me, as I'm not prone to making up stories. I'm a very rational person, but I still wonder what that thing was and if these predator-like entities exist all around us, PK.
Wow. Well, you know, now just based on the size, it sounds almost like it's fey, right? Because it's tiny, but that's really dumb of me to assume that. Like, why couldn't an alien, maybe aliens are tiny. I don't know.
Maybe that species of alien is just tiny. Maybe. Would be much easier to hide and make your way around the areas if you were invisible and 8 inches tall.
But I like to think that this is fey. I don't know why. I just like the little hunters, right? The cloaking duendes. Or like you were talking about earlier, the guy with harboring goblins.
Yeah. So the reason I like the idea of it being fey is it seemed to understand whatever this thing was, seemed to understand what vehicles were.
Yeah.
Right? To me, if it was an alien, how would you know to be afraid of it? Have you ever seen the movie The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Yeah, yeah.
You remember when the very beginning, whenever old boy's walking out there, like he's going to shake hands with him with the car, and almost, he's got maybe a flowers, whatever it is, and the car almost runs him over?
Yeah.
It always makes me think to that. That little clip makes me think of, it almost has to be something that knows what vehicles are. Otherwise, why would it try to hide? Why would it stop? Why would it just walk out there? Like, you know, I'm not afraid of it.
How would it even know what a road is?
Exactly.
You know?
So maybe it is fae. And again, like we discussed, maybe there is a much more like fae background to all of these Glimmer Man sightings.
Maybe.
I hope so.
Check this out. It says, I'm writing to you from the state of Michigan. I will be 67 years old in March of 2023 and I've hunted in my early days and fished all of my life. I spent countless all-nighters on a sandbar catching catfish before the sun came up in my 20s and 40s. I spent a lot of time in a tree stand with my bow. Then I migrated to my 44 Magnum hand cannon. I used this for hunting whitetails. I was never happy hunting until I reached the deepest, darkest dungeons of the forest or timber that I was in. When I moved to Michigan from Iowa after my wife passed, it was like a treasure trove of outdoor activity. I met and remarried my now wife in 2004. We live on the east side of Lake Michigan, towards the tip of the thumb. Lately, I fish very little and stopped hunting because of the intense pressure and my age. It just wasn't fun anymore. But I continue to be a competitive shooter. After moving to Michigan, I started hearing stories about the Michigan Dogman. I just blew it off. About 5 years ago, there was a sighting by a man named Joe Barger, who was a semi-truck driver that was hauling a load in the Upper Peninsula. He stated that this creature tried to crawl into his moving truck. He stated that he shot this creature in the head and watched it fall to the ground as the truck sped away. About 3 or 4 months ago, I read a local story about a dogman sighting just north of us in a small town named Port Hope. We live on a 4.5 acre acreage with a very high banked creek that flows behind the old farmhouse. We have chickens, goats, pigs, 2 cows, and barn cats and a few dogs. I believe it was early October of 2022. I was out in the back by the creek when I heard what I thought was a faint growl. I didn't think much of it until I got back inside and I asked which one of our dogs was outside. My youngest replied that they're all in the house and no dogs were out. My wife looked at me and asked, "Why? What is wrong?" She asked if I was okay. She said the color simply drained right out of my face. She was concerned because she knows that there is very little that scares me. I told her that I was out back, and I could swear I heard one of those dogs growling at me. He said they have all been inside before you even went outside, and I grabbed my .44 and flashlight, and I went out back. I didn't hear or see anything. I cautiously went back again the next night just to look around, and I heard the growl again. But this time it was a lot louder, and it sounded like it was right behind me, like just feet away. I quickly turned around, pointing my .44 in that direction. But again, I saw nothing. But the lower branches of the pine trees were moving. Remind you, there was no wind. I quickly moved back into the house. My wife looked at me again and simply said, "What?" My wife is from Michigan. I never met my father-in-law because he died of cancer in the early 80s. I told her what I experienced the last 2 nights, and the color drained from her face. She stated, "You can't be serious." I told her, "Does it look like I'm joking?" She walked over and sat in the chair and began telling me a story told to her by her dad about a deer camp many years ago. She said that her dad told her of a time at a deer camp when they saw a man with a face like a dog. She said that her dad never went hunting after that again. Anyways, when I go outside at night to feed the critters, I always carry my .44 with me. We live on a flat farmland area of the thumb. The biggest thing that scares me is the creek. You can spit and hit the creek. It's that close. The scary part about the creek is it has high banks on both sides. Even a very tall creature could easily walk down the center of the creek for miles unseen in any direction because the sides are so high. You would never even see it. I wasn't sure if I needed to tell anyone this because I didn't actually see anything other than moving branches, but I did hear the horrible growl. What I experienced wasn't normal, but it was very real. Michael. So, again, there's a, for whatever reason, Michigan and Wisconsin have a lot of these dogman sightings. Now, again, I get his point. He didn't actually see it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it wasn't a dog, man. Maybe it was just a stray dog. I don't know. He doesn't know, but his wife definitely told the story that her dad told her about a man with a dog-like face. So,
well, and even what he's talking about with them walking the creeks, we know now for a fact that if there are Sasquatch, if all that's out there, that it uses, like everything else does, creek bottoms and channels to travel.
Sure, sure.
Because it's so much easier.
And it's a water source, too.
Yeah, and it's so much easier to travel. It's like a highway. And like a dry creek or one that's barely got any water in it, it truly is like a highway.
Yeah.
Like it's so easy to travel through. And it's the lowest point. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense that any of that stuff would be out there.
Yo, if you look at sightings like in Texas, the majority of them are along the Brazos River.
Yeah. Yep. They come, well, in all the rivers, as you start looking down through there, all the creeks and rivers, it's usually all real close.
The Trinity, Sabine, the Kamal, all of them, right?
I've got here something that this is one of those stories that's I'm real partial to. And I'd even talk to you a little bit about this off air because you and I both love it. All the folks that are listening, you remember the story from Mount St. Helens during the eruption when they talked about the military had bodies of Bigfoot.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That there was a bunch of them killed during the eruption and all this. So listen to this story. This one comes back all the way back from 1938. Another one that Lon sent me because he knows I kind of got the bug for the Mount St. Helens stuff. Get a load of this, y'all. It says, this is a Bigfoot encounter told to me by my grandfather. It happened in the early fall of 1938. First of all, before I go any further, can you imagine camping up there in 1938?
No.
Imagine being in the woods anywhere in the 30s. Like, you talk about quiet, no light pollution.
That part would be awesome. What wouldn't be awesome is like the camping gear and equipment.
Well, it wouldn't be that bad. I mean, it's not changed as far as that. Yeah, there's been, some gears changed, but they've had wool socks and cots since before then anyway, so it wouldn't be too terrible.
I got to layer up, baby. I need my thermal layers and all that.
Right? So it says that he and his friends did a backpacking trip to a small remote lake near Mount St. Helens, and they did this annually. And one year, they even summited the volcano during their camping trip. Well, this particular year, there were five of them. The hike end took a couple of days back then to get it all in there, which makes sense as you're hiking in. That doesn't change as you're walking in with all your gear, right? There weren't as many dirt roads built as there are now, which makes sense. And they chose late summer and early fall when the berries were in season and the fish were usually biting well because they didn't want to pack a lot of food. Another genius move. So it helped to lighten the load out of their backpacks. My grandfather was a little over 20 years old during this backpacking trip. And after the two-day hike to the lake, they set up camp and decided the next morning that my grandfather and another guy would try to catch some fish. The other three young men would go collect berries. So the next morning they did just that. My grandpa walked to the far side of the lake with his buddy. And they were on the side that says, oh, here we go. Walked to the far side of his lake to start fishing. His buddy stayed on the side near his camp. The fish were biting and he had caught quite a few when all of a sudden he started to feel uneasy as if he was being watched. The hair on the back of his neck seemed to stand on end. Then he got a whiff of a foul, rotting stench. He started to look around, and directly behind him, only 20 or 30 feet away, there were three giant human-like creatures covered in dark brown hair from head to toe standing at the tree line. My grandfather was a large man and stood around 6'4", and the smallest of these three creatures was just as tall as he was. However, it was much wider at the shoulders and much thicker. According to what he was looking at, the next creature was a foot taller, and then the third was even a foot taller than that one, putting each of them 6 feet or better. The next one was over 7, and the other was over 8. He was overwhelmed with adrenaline from fear and panic, and he wanted to run. However, these three giants staring at him were blocking the only direction he could go. The only way that he could get away would be to leap in the lake and swim. So, he decided his best option was to calm down and just keep doing what he's doing. So, he cast his line in and began fishing. Shortly after that, he caught another nice trout. And while reeling it in, it dawned on him that these creatures may be here for his fish. So, he unhooked the trout and he tossed it to them. The smallest of the three stepped away from the tree line and retrieved the trout and brought it back to the other two. So, he continued to toss fish to them. the smaller the three Bigfoot continued to retrieve them. After a while, he landed a really nice fourth trout, and he went to toss it back to them, but they were gone. He then grabbed his equipment and ran around the lake in the direction of his other buddy. After finding him, he said that they need to go get the hell out of there and began telling him what happened as they headed back to camp. Well, when they got to camp, the other friends were already there picking up camp gear in a hurry. They stated that they had ran across three giant hairy creatures while out berry hunting. It took the group only one long day to hike back out. That says that they did not know what they had encountered. They had never heard of anything like that in the 1930s since the term Bigfoot was not known. After that trip, well, they never went back to Mount St. Helens. They changed the location of their yearly backpacking trip. My grandfather stated that it wasn't until the 1967 Patterson-Gimlin film was shown in theaters across the nation that he finally had a name for the three giant creatures that he had had his close encounter with. Thanks, D.S.
Wow. Again, with the berry picking.
Well, and I like the fact that they were like, the grandpa didn't even know. Had no, yeah. 30, over 30 years or right at 30 years goes by before he's like, oh, so that's what y'all call them.
Yeah, he just didn't know.
I get it. I get it now. I had no idea. The reason I like these stories is that window, folks, that window right in there of that time before. All those encounters that people reported having, or and even all the ones that they never reported, prior to the fact of Bigfoot being, let's say, common knowledge, if you will,
right.
What could it have been, right? Like they had no predetermined ideas of anything. It just turns around and there they are. But the other great thing is this. Back then, people didn't seem surprised.
I agree.
None of them seemed to be like, oh my God. They were just like, yep, there they are.
I do believe, like, especially the older the Bigfoot sighting, the more real it is. I don't know why, but it just like you were describing, being back up there in the mountains in the 30s, to me, it would seem logical that there was type of North American ape or some kind of crazy hominid up there, where now I just don't, I'm like, why can't we find
it? It feels like it makes more sense, right?
It does.
And there's less people, there's less roads. My thought has always been that. It's like as they cut in, as they've pushed in and encroached, they've moved out. Like, imagine if they were there, if they still are, whichever one, how easy it would have been, let's say, to really get off the beaten trail in 1938. You wouldn't have to go as far to get away from everything.
Right.
You could just literally, all the places that anybody listening likes to camp now, imagine what it would have been like in the 30s to go up there in those areas.
It'd be amazing.
Yes.
Right?
So I'm glad y'all enjoyed it, or at least I hope you did. I've got some other crazy stuff for you. When I get back from the break, we're going to be talking about some haunted police stations, places that I never even thought might have a ghost in it, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Okay, y'all, here we go with some more creepy stories. See if I can do my best to give y'all a little entertainment with this madness. Let me lay this out for you. For as long as y'all been listening, you know that we've done a lot of stuff about Illinois, right? Kyle and I love the Mothman. We love these ideas of the strange encounters, I guess, that go on in and around O'Hare Airport, right? Like, we've done it before. Talked about a bunch of the stuff that goes on there. For some reason, Illinois and around Chicago is a very odd, you know, paranormal, if you will, place. And when I was doing some reading back a while, I came across this little account. And so I started digging into it. I kind of saved it as a note, right? I'm like, I need to look into that. What is that? So I go back, do a little bit more digging. And of course, it leads down this rabbit hole, if you will, of these odd occurrences and hauntings of police stations. And I don't know why it never dawned on me before, right? Like the idea of them being, it's pretty simple. If I have to explain it to myself, right? Talking out loud, it's pretty simple. It doesn't matter what's the business, it's in this building, that the building itself is simply a vessel. right? It's simply a container for whatever we do out of the weather. That's truly all a building is. A little safety and a little shelter from Mother Nature. That's about it. So it doesn't matter what they put in there. It matters what had gone down in the past and things along that line. So I shouldn't be surprised or shocked, if you will, that there's some crazy, you know, haunted police stations around the world. But for some reason it did. It caught me odd. So I started looking into it. I came across this one here. This is the one I want to lead off with because it's in Illinois. It's actually in McHenry County, Illinois, which is a very rural part near a small village there called Bull Valley. And it's a beautiful building, right? It's a pretty place. But as you look, this place is called the George Stickney House, or it's been simply referred to in the past as Stickney Mansion. Now, this is pretty cool. So back in 85, the Bull Valley Police Department moved into this house, right? And I believe it's still there. As last I checked, I believe everything is still there. It's all still, they were talking about, I believe, moving them out to turn it into a museum. I forgot how to go, but anyway. So it's, this place is extremely historic, this building, Stickney House. In fact, of course, it was placed on the historic registry back in 79. That's how long ago it was. So let me tell you a little bit about it. George and his wife, Sylvia, built this home back in 1865. Now, it was a very isolated place back then, right? It's rural now, but back then you can imagine. We're talking very isolated, very quiet, very peaceful. I don't know if it was how it all got going. But anyway, they built this big home and the story goes that they started hosting seances, parties, right? Now back, you got to imagine this 1865, anytime around the turn of the century, right around the early 1900s, that was a big thing, right? Spiritualism, all of this stuff was going on, was a big deal. So they were both said, and the stories go, that they were both mediums. George and Sylvia were both mediums and that they could contact the other side. So they were always involved in spiritualistic activities, if you will. So they decided to have these parties, this, that, and the other. And it said, speculated, I don't know if it was ever said by them, but it was said that the reason they had built the house where they did is because of the seclusion, that it made it easier. I guess there was, I don't know if there's interference, but there might have been less of whatever it was out there. So this was the whole thing. Now, if you look back, it seems to be their doorway to spiritualism was the fact that they had lost some children. So, you know, this wasn't uncommon back then, but it's still, you know, heart destroying nonetheless. And they had lost children. They had 10 children, folks, 10. Again, not uncommon for the time. And not uncommon for the time, they only had 3 that survived to adulthood. So, hence the reason that they were really into spiritualism. It's believed and understood that they would conduct these seances in order to try to reach their children. They were wanting to talk to their children. Not only that, but the odd thing about this home is it was built with no corners. So when you look at the home, it's rounded. The inside's rounded. The whole thing is a rounded radius. There's not really like acute 90-degree angles like in most homes. And it was said to believe that George believed that this would keep spirits from getting entangled. They could freely flow through the area, okay? Well, it turns out it may have had a little bit more than he had thought. So fast forward till we're talking about the police department's in there. Things are going on. And there was a man back in the day, believed that he was I think he had transferred in back when this all went down. But the fella's name was Ken Hoffman. So Ken was going to go and then he applied for to be a police officer there. And they interviewed him. He's been interviewed a few times. And a lot of this stuff you'll find anywhere you go to really dig into it. But the story goes that while he sat down, Ken was being interviewed. I believe he's just going to be a part-time officer at the time. But he was being talked to by the chief of police at the time, Chief Sauer. And so Chief Sauer was telling him, said, "Hey, look, man, I hope you enjoyed here. It's a great place, a good place to work. But I've had officers leave because of this house." And of course, Ken's like, "Well, that's weird. A home." You know, he had no idea, right? No clue about what was happening. So he goes on, does all this stuff. Now, if you want to know where Bull Valley is, it's only like an hour north of Chicago, right? So he goes on. Sauer pulls out. The chief pulls out this binder and says, hey, look, bro, this house is haunted. You don't believe me? Look through it. He hands him this binder, and it starts telling the history of the house, all of the stuff that went down, right? Everything about the building of the home, the possible seances, all the things that went down. It's got all of this crazy stuff that's in there. So they're like, well, that's kind of strange, you know. So Hoffman's like, but I'm going with it anyway, right? So he goes on. And I believe he worked there for years, 16, 17 years Hoffman ended up working there. Now, there was a police chief at the time, and I believe that maybe current police chief Dickens. Dickens was even interviewed and talked to about all this. And Dickens, Chief Dickens, said that he was completely unaware of any of this stuff that was going on that had to do with his home. And he's from Chicago, so an hour away, had no idea. It's almost like local folklore. So he goes down there, takes the job, right, does all this stuff, gets this same thing, the same as Hoffman, except Hoffman, of course, did it a little bit earlier. So they're talking to these guys, and they're asking him about things. So they talked to Chief Dickens and said, hey, look, when I was an officer here, I'm going to tell you a story that happened. Said, I go and I'm working a night shift, right? And I make a traffic arrest. So I bring the driver back in. So I bring him in. I got to do all the paperwork. So brings him in, handcuffs the driver to the bench. And I'm picturing just a small town like Mayberry, right? I'm picturing a small town police station, this whole thing just sitting there like everybody knows everybody type stuff. So the chief says, hey, look, I'm sitting there back in the day. I'm writing all this stuff down. I'm trying to get it all wrapped up. And while this is going on, because it's, of course, in the wee hours, I'm sure, of the morning, he starts telling the person that he arrested the story. And I'm guessing it was not a big deal because the chief said, I was just waiting for the person, the guy's wife, to come pick him up. So might have been a public, you know, intoxication, whatever it is, nothing major, right? Maybe, who knows? They're not going to hold him over. But anyway, so they're having this conversation. Hey, look, bro, you're in trouble. This is what we're doing. Call your wife. Get this going. Let me tell you about this haunted building you're in, right? I'm picturing it 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning after the bars are out. That's what I'm picturing telling here in this story. But who knows? So the story goes that Chief Dickens said, hey, we're sitting there. I'm talking to him and I hear a knock on the door, at the front door. But it's three distinctive kunk, kunk, kunk. On the door, right? So you're like, okay. So Dickens runs up and he's like, I guess it's the guy's wife. I'm going to go out there and let him in. So opens the door, says he looks out in the parking lot. There's nobody there, nothing. And he looks back at the dude he's got arrested, and this dude is sheet white. After hearing the stories, and of course going through the arrest, I'm sure it's probably not going so well. Now you hear that. Chief Dickens said, hey, look, man, if you're going to leave me, at least throw me the handcuff keys. This is what the guy tells the chief. Throw me the handcuffs keys so I can run too, right? I cannot stay in here. So he goes back through there. So this all happened within, I would say, 2015 to present day when Chief Dickens was talking about that occurrence. So it's not that long ago. But you go back, he's had a few more. Talks about how that there was a filing cabinet in the building there that you could see open on its own, that it actually had a latch, right? Click, click, and it would pop open, slide open the whole thing like it was being opened from the other side, right? Like this whole deal. Dickens goes on to talk about how he's never felt like in trouble, never felt anything eerie there. And I thought that was really interesting. Like, it's not the fact that it's dangerous. It's just the fact that they're there, right? They're just hanging out there. So Hoffman, that was doing the interview so many years ago, said the whole thing, said that when he, I guess, got to know Chief Sauer back in the day a little bit better, Hoffman was laughing about it, you know, and was like, hey, look, the whole deal. And they kind of joked about it, this whole thing. When interviewing them, Officer Hoffman come forward and said, hey, look, I've had more than one occurrence in this building. I've been here for 16 years, and I've had like 5 of them. And starts talking about some wild stuff of seeing, here's the greatest thing, metal chairs, right? Metal chairs moving, hearing them, seeing them, just knowing that that wasn't where we left it. What did we hear it? Like, you imagine being somewhere down the hall, you hear the movement, you go in, the chairs have moved around. There's nobody there. You're there at 2 o'clock in the morning as an officer. And as an officer, you're expected to be a little more brave. You know, I mean, let's be honest. When you're a first responder like that, you're expected to run towards the danger, not away from it. And that's easily said than done, right? Like, it's easy to say you're going to do it until you come to things that you can't wrap your head around. Like, it's super simple, and I say it's super simple, of course. It's simple to discern the fact this is dangerous. This is a person with a gun. This is a person with a knife. This is a fire. This is, and you run in there. But when you run into the unknown, that's a different thing. And not everybody reacts the same. I mean, who knows how we'd react if we've never been in that position. So he starts talking about seeing this, hearing this, office furniture moving around, noises, drawers opening and closing. Actually said that saw a female figure in this place only to watch it vanish. Like, it just walks into a room, go in the room, it's gone. He said he's had fellow officers talking about seeing soldiers outside. We'll get to that. Seeing soldiers outside. Chief Sauer has actually passed away. Talks about apparently they had photos of rooms that were like rearranged and everything, like chairs were stacked and all this stuff. Like, it was a poltergeist messing with them, but it was never anything bad. Hoffman goes on. It's like, He's been quoted in saying that, I know this house so well that I don't have any bad vibes here. So you got to think, if you came in without any, you know, any ideas, any forethought to what this might be going on, you may have had some negative experiences, right? But coming into it without knowing a word about it, maybe it's just that much easier. So they're all there, right? Chief Dickens is still there. They're all there, still going through it. All of them say they don't feel unsafe at all. And they talk about it being just a normal thing. I don't know if they've moved it to the museum yet. I know that that was talks and some of the stuff that I read, that they were finally going to just make it a museum and get the PD out and all this. Who knows? So it'll be a sad day if the PD moves out of there and they're not around. You know, they can't hang out with the ghosts anymore or whatnot. But that's not the only one that goes down in Chicago. There is another one called the Maxwell Street Station. Now, this is pretty wild because let me get this straight for y'all to, I don't know how they judge this, right? The criteria for haunted houses or haunted anything, buildings, period. But apparently in Chicago, there's upwards of at least half a dozen, if not more, that they know of haunted police stations, right? That they know for a fact is haunted. Half a dozen. Right now, that may be different now the way it was, but back in the day, and when I'm talking back in the day, I'm going back to the early 1900s, when at the time of spiritualism, right, seances, all of the paranormal stuff was really bumping. That's when this really got going on. Some of these police stations have some really wild histories of the buildings that were there maybe before they were police stations, or we know that maybe it was a little rougher around the edge and less refined in the 1900s, right? And when you start talking about policing and whatnot. So there could have been anything that goes on there. People have talked about suicides in there. They've talked about, you know, murders taking place in the buildings. They've talked about a lot of things that goes on. Now, there was one built in 1888 in Chicago called the 7th District Police Station. And apparently in and around this area was back in the day very, very violent and had very rough living conditions back in this time. So, of course, they moved the police force in, and the police force, in order to combat, you know, let's say strength and brutality, what do? Well, you send in people that are accustomed to strength and brutality. And that's the way things were handled back then, right? And it's still handled that way in lots of places today. Is like, sometimes the only thing you understand carrying is a hammer, and that's kind of what they did. So they sent in hammers in this area. So you can imagine it probably didn't go well. There was probably a lot of nefarious shenanigans that went down in this whole area of whatnot. In fact, it actually, there's a lot of nicknames that got picked up for this area for all this. One of them was called Bloody Maxwell. One of them was called the Old Red Fortress. And one of it became to known at Maxwell Street Station was the wickedest police district in the world. So all of this stuff takes place at the 7th District Station. So you can imagine the vibes alone, as we were talking about the vibes of this area, right? So there's stories of a woman dressed in black that's in this area. And it's this woman's been seen by police and by just everyday folks in and around the station. Now, apparently she's dressed, of course, in turn of the century clothing. So it's fitting for it to come from that area. There's another one. It's like a haunted landmark of this area, you know, where they talk about seeing ghosts and hearing. This is pretty wild. More doors. So you'll hear a door, right? Ba-boom. You'll hear it close. Somebody will go to investigate the door. There's nobody there. Boom. The door or the room they came from, they can hear the same door. So they're like, wait a second. You go back. Nobody's there. It's kind of like they all get together, right? And they're opening and closing doors. You think of the television series Ghosts, right? Where it's they're just all hanging out and only one can see them. So imagine that you're working the doors in unison. Nobody can see you, but you're just messing around. Like, I'm opening one. Y'all are opening one. You go open one. We'll just get them running back and forth. It seems like they were having fun. And for those of you that are around my age and a little older and liked police drama, or your family liked police dramas whenever you were a young person, you will remember there used to be an old television series called Hill Street Blues. Y'all can go back and look it up. I'm sure there's videos of it on YouTube, clips of it on YouTube. It was a thing. It was one of those gritty crime dramas back before that even became a thing. This is kind of like leading into the genre of gritty crime drama. And you remember it rolls, the door rolls up and the cars come out and all that stuff. Well, what you are looking at right there, okay, is the Hill Street Blues station. That is Maxwell. That's the Maxwell Street Station is where they filmed that part, not the show, but, you know, the opening credits. That station is the Maxwell Station that they actually used. I think now it actually has, I think it's University of Illinois has their police department in it. I think it's where they keep all that stuff. So, like I was saying, they know for now, back in the 1900s, there was at least half a dozen of these haunted police stations in this area. There's also a place in Chicago known as the Stockyards, much like we have in Fort Worth. And yeah, it's the same thing. Rough and rowdy. It was butcher shops. You can just imagine running in the cattle, the whole thing. So it was a big deal. You can only imagine what happened back in the day there. So remember when I brought up the ghosts, seeing the ghosts outside, right? Well, apparently the story goes all the way back from where it originated in 1902 was that a soldier had asked to stay the night there. And of course, they said, yeah, man, you can stay the night here. We don't mind one bit. Well, the soldier passed away overnight. Doesn't go into any kind of details of how or why, just that that's what happened. So the next morning, as the officers come in, he looks out into the snow and goes, well, there's the soldier, the dude standing over there. And then he goes inside. He's like, hey, bro. Waves at him, whatnot. Goes inside. Well, there's the guy's body. Runs back outside. No tracks and no body. But he knows that he saw him. That goes on. And apparently there has been at least one report of sighting that soldier every year since 1902. One person, at least. There's lots of times several more. But at least one reports seeing that. So it's good to know they're still there. Another one talks about at the Hyde Park Station. There was an officer came forward saying, look, we stayed the night there, you know, doing sleeping in there. Said I was under my covers. I'm out. I felt someone pulling the blanket. So instantly you think, well, there's going to be some horseplay, right? Somebody's in here horseplaying and messing around. So he leans up, looks around. He's like, I'm trying to pull the blanket back, right? I'm pulling them back up. Finally gets them back. All right. Tries to go back to sleep. Pulls again. This time he sets up and pulls them back up. Excuse me. And instead of there being someone there, there's no one. So as he sets up, said it's dawning on him, where did this come from? The spectral image says it's the shape of a woman. Doesn't really go into detail, but the spectral shape of a woman appears and says that it's got one glowing red eye. Well, at this point, dude is freaking, right? Freaking out. Now, it doesn't say what time this is, so I'm assuming this is still at the turn of the century. I'm not assuming this would happen recent. This is something that sounds like it would go on because the dude is freaked out, pulls his pistol, and starts busting rounds off at it in the building. Boom, 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 right? The other officers that were there come running in to find out what's going on. There's bullet holes in the wall, and he's like, what is going down here? Everybody's asking. Then he has to say, I was shooting at a ghost. Like, I can't even imagine, right? How do you explain that? I panicked and shot at a ghost. there's other stories about inmates that were being kept in the little jails in there, right, in the little cells, said that they could not only have the same thing happen to them where the blankets were pulled off or something was always kind of messing with their things. It was also reported that they would have a tough time breathing, not from some kind of sickness, this, that, or the other, but that they claimed to have felt hands on their neck while they were in there. So it got me to thinking again, right? Well, where else can I think of that's got a long line or a long history rather of police enforcement in and around this area, right? Just taking care of things and a lot of this. So I said, wait a second. So I did a little Google search. Now we're going to jump across the big water and we're going to check on our friends over there in the UK. There are a lot. You folks have got a bunch over there. I'm assuming too, it's because it's so much older than it is here. Those buildings are so, you know, who knows? So I got to looking up, and one of the worst ones, and this is just heart-wrenching, one of the worst ones happened in 1953. And for those of you over in this area, I'm sure that you are completely aware of it. But apparently there was a huge natural disaster on January 31st of 1953, the North Sea. It had flooded the coast of Canvey Island. Okay, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, because if I'm not, well, sorry, it's on y'all, right? I'm not listening to y'all. So it was one of those things. 59 people died that evening in that flooding. So apparently all this stuff. Now, you got to mind you, 1953 was like a different continent, a whole different planet compared to what it's like now as far as logistics and being able to work together and communicate and all that, right? It was just a thing. So that's what they were talking about, is first responders were the local police, because everything else was so shaken up from the storm, from all that, all hell was breaking loose. They're the only ones. So they're running down in there doing all this. And of course, you know, they're finding the worst of the worst, this, that, and the other. So the story goes that while this was back like in the 90s, so what they're saying is some of this may have where some of the possible spirits or the connections to this came from. So back in the 90s, this was talked about, said there was a constable in this area, said they kept hearing footsteps that would go across the floor downstairs, would go across stairs, would just basically move through anything. And goes on to say that it goes on not for a little bit, but like it went on for 30 minutes, right? I'd left, come back in, this whole thing, said it was making me go crazy. There's another one that talks about that same crazy staircase. Listen to this. It says that I worked at Canvey Island Police Station for a number of years, and everybody who worked there used to say that the staircase at the kitchen at the end of the station was haunted, as it was always cold for no matter what time of year it was or how hot it was. Some people would always avoid using the staircase because they found it creepy. The rumor is, here's where it picks up, folks, that in 1953, the police put all of the bodies that they had recovered from the floodwater and took them down to the mortuary until, well, because they couldn't basically put them in the morgue. So they kept them in the bottom of the police station down there, down those stairs, until the water receded so they could actually get it. Now, stories say this. There's no evidence that that's what happened in there, but it is believed that the police at the time, they didn't have any other way to do it. They would load them into the cars when they found them, and they would take them back. And that way they could keep, there's no other place to put them, right, for safety and other. So they would take them to the police station. They would lay them out, you know, roll them all up, however they could do it, ones they could find, and they would just wait. And that was the only thing that they knew to do, basically, in order to keep them, I guess you could say, safe, but also with a little bit of respect, right? Like, you just don't want to leave them in the trunk of your car, right? Nobody's just piling them up like cordwood. They were just people that had lost their lives. So this is one of those things that they believe that even though there's no written reports of it, they believe that that was true. And that's what explains the majority of the oddities seen in and around this area. There's a few more. Like I said, there's ones. Manchester apparently has them. Apparently there's a place like called the Old Denton Police Station. And I don't know that it goes on much anymore, but that between like the middle of the 70s, there was a police officer named Ted Etherton. And that he goes on to talk about that he had seen figures walking around at that time in and out, ghostly white figures in and out of the locker rooms. Yeah, crazy. Just going in it like it was maybe past police officers going in and out of locker rooms. And of course, you know, Mr. Evington chased them, said they never found anybody, anything like that. You fast forward a couple of years, there was another officer named Mike Barron. And he was in the same place, hanging out, just chilling. And again, saw a ghostly figure. So he's like, wait, what's going on? Goes in there. Can't find him. So what does he do? Now, he knows it's all locked up. He's the only one in it. Did you talk about somebody thinking quick? He goes, I'll figure this out. He goes and gets one of the police dogs. Guess he was a handler, right? Brings it in. It's like, we're going to find it. Turns it loose, like, hunt for him, boys. Let's find him. Nothing. Nothing comes up. So knowing that you've seen this and then going and getting a dog and nothing comes up, that's going to be unsettling, right? Completely unsettling. So they had a woman named Doris Weir. And Doris Weir was the woman that did all the housekeeping in the station. This is in 1978. So she's working outside this courtroom. Early one morning, she comes in. She's trying to get a jump on things, right? She's ready to get off early, too. She reports that she was looking through a door, getting ready to push in, right? And she noticed a white-coated figure looking back at her. Except this one was at the bottom of a staircase. This is a different place, folks. This one's at the bottom of a staircase. She walks by, looks down. This thing's looking up, pushes the door open. This thing's looking up at her, right? She freaks out. She goes back, starts telling folks the whole thing. Goes back, starts letting them go. At that point, she said that she quit going down there to do any of the work. This is in 78, unless she carried a stick, so the police gave her a baton, or that they would let one of the police dogs go with her. Now, how wild is that? They would let her take the police dogs. Now, here's what gets even crazier. That was the last one. That was the midtime. That was 78. Never saw it again. It's never been reported. Gone. Vanished. Makes me wonder, was it attached to something? Was that figure attached to maybe, I don't know, anything that was involved in a murder, anything that was involved in a missing persons, right? Like, who knows what it could have rode itself in on? Maybe it rode itself on the belongings of a murder victim. Maybe that's what it was. And as it was being kept in the back, that's where all the, you know, everything was being stored. So maybe that's what it kind of tied itself to. It's just odd to me that these old cities that you find them. And again, like I said at the start of the show, it seems to be because, right, because of what went down there. Not necessarily what's in there. It's not like it was the police that brought it. It seems to be that what went down there. Then I found one here in India. They had a haunted police station in India that the policemen left. They were like, I know everything looks good here. This is what goes on to be. Everything looks good. Everything seems good. But they're like, it ain't good. Right? Their one head inspector said, nothing appears fine here. We feel terrified all the time due to the sudden fear. And that's in Jharkhand state, I guess. Jharkhand. So anyhow, going on, it says it goes on to this. So they shut this place down as it was haunted, apparently in 67, right? Because that's how long ago this was going on. Nobody would work there. Nobody, nothing. So they shut it down when it was a railway station. They open it back up as a police station. Guess what? They don't stay either. The police are like, bro, we're not hanging out here. I'm done with this place too. Don't forget, there was a police station, and I believe, was it Ariposa? Where was it? It was in New Mexico. I remember the police station in New Mexico because they had wanted a video of ghosts. I believe is what that was. This was way back in the day. I want to say it was almost 10 years ago. I think I've got it here, and I will tell you exactly. Yeah, Espanola, New Mexico. That's what it was. I remember this now, where they had a video of like a blurry human-shaped figure, if you will, and it walks through the chain link fence, right? Just whoosh, right through there. Said, and I remember they interviewed, yep, right here. Officer Romero said, look, I was on duty that night. There's no way for it to get through that. There's no way for anything to walk through that unless it's not real. Said, at first I thought it was a flyer or a moth. He says, but then I saw legs and it was human, but not a real human. No, it was a ghost. And I'm like, yeah, bro, it was a ghost. So if you've got any strange, and I've got a bunch more, I'm fixing to touch off on some others too, but I'll do that in another episode real quick. But so when you look at these places, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to start really digging into some other spots like haunted malt shops, right? We're going to find some wild haunted fire stations. There's probably a bunch of them, of things that can, I guess, attach themselves to things. And then that's where they are. And there's probably a lot of it, because you think about bringing in anything from any of these murder scenes or even being there. Maybe the spirit attached itself to one of the officers because it knew that it had a chance for that officer to help it. I don't know. There's tons of really odd occurrences that go on. But it does, now after telling you about it, it kind of makes sense, right? You start thinking about it, like, I understand funeral homes and churches or something like that, but a police station, well, now you think about it, you're like, hey, I think it's going to work out. I kind of understand why they're haunted like that. So I hope y'all enjoyed it. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll kick around a few more things, and I'll pick Mr. Filson's brain about the whole thing. Y'all are listening to Expanded Perspectives. I hope you enjoyed the madness of a few haunted police stations. Like I said, I've got a bunch more I'm fixing to drop too, so I've got some more of those going on. But again,
I love those stories, man.
It could have been anything. I really do feel like whenever you start bringing stuff in from all the crime scenes, right, where you're looking for clues, whatever you're looking for, right, the property room, search and seizure, that there could be something attached to those things, those items, whether it was involved in a murder, whether it was any of this, brought into the police station. Like when they talk about seeing things for a few years and then they're gone, that's what it always makes me think about, is if it didn't happen in there, they brought it in. Much like when we talk about people going to these estate sales and purchasing things and not really knowing, and they bring it in, they start having these weird occurrences.
Yeah.
Maybe that's could have led to some of it too. And then again, too, like we said in Essex, where the big, back there where the flooding happened and those people lost their lives. Maybe that's what it was. Maybe they really were kept down there. I don't know. There's just so many of it. But again,
there's a lot of despair at a police station. You know what I mean? Lots of people will have gone through hard times.
Hard times.
So maybe
yeah,
that energy gets stuck.
There's plenty of, yeah, I mean, it could have easily been, that could have been part of the explanation. There's so many, doing this show as long as we have and reading the stories and talking to people, I'm not surprised now that any place has some strange occurrences. But for some reason, a police station, like I said before, folks, never dawned on me. It never really dawned
never thought
on me
about it
about
either.
Of a police station.
I would think of like mortuaries and funeral homes and
hospitals,
places like that.
Asylums.
Yeah. That all makes sense, right?
All makes sense. But a police department, even a fire station, to me makes sense of it being haunted for some reason. I don't know why, right? It makes sense. But to me, a police department, it never did. But also, too, I'm thinking of police departments the way we have them in our town. They're brand new. Right. Like they just built the brand new one, and the PD has a really nice place here in the town we're in now. So, I mean, it's one of those.
Yeah.
I think of those. I don't think about them being in these old, old houses or these old businesses from back in the day. Right.
That is.
So it makes a little more sense.
It's cool. Speaking of haunted houses, yeah, there's that one that's not very far from here.
The one in Mineral Wells?
Yeah.
And we need to go.
Would you stay there? Seriously? Because like, I think you can stay like $200. You can stay the night there. And,
for the show,
if we Marshall, your dentist, his wife and some of her friends stayed the night there.
I'll have to talk to him about it. We should do it.
I don't think I want anything, any part of it, man.
He's doing it, folks.
No.
He's doing it.
I don't think I want any part of that.
He's doing it. He's
it's
doing
creepy.
It,
I don't want that attaching. And it's going to know, right? It's going to feed off the fear and it's going to know.
Well, then it's going to be full when it gets done with you.
I know. It's going to know that
so I'm safe.
Yeah, you'll be safe.
That's why I'm taking you.
No way, man.
Yeah, you're going to go with a Ouija board?
No. Right? No. I'm going to take an iPad and I'm going to watch like Jomez Pro.
Yeah. Now you're talking a little disc golf.
Yeah, right.
I got you something here I think you're going to really enjoy.
Oh, this is what you were telling me. Okay,
this is what I was talking about before we started.
Yeah.
Folks, this comes back from a few years ago. There was an encounter. There was a thing talking about a man from Zimbabwe, a Zimbabwean businessman. Okay. Now, we know they have different views and different ideals over there, but I want you to listen to this. According to some local villagers and police, villagers and two police officers ran for cover after they allegedly stumbled upon goblins in a businessman's suitcase while searching for poison that allegedly led to the death of several community members' dogs. The businessman's name was Sanderson Bloom Semuasha, who runs a grinding mill in the Lapote Business Center in Dete, Zimbabwe, in the eye of the storm, as he is also being accused of digging a grave of one of his wife's relatives. So I don't know what that happened, right? Mm-hmm. So the businessman has vehemently denied all of this. Now, the villagers, of course, are fired up because their dogs mysteriously died after going on to his homestead land. Now, the villagers enlisted the services of police officers from the Dete police base who accompanied them, but were gripped with fear when they opened the businessman's suitcase. And this is what was said. This is written. It says they were shocked when they saw strange beings, which they believed were goblins, and were seeing running for their dear lives. Most recently, he was seen by visitors, talking about the fella, digging a grave of a relative of his wife. He fled from the scene, leaving his shoes, which were used as exhibits, and the issue was taken to Chief Nelkoba. And after a full trial, the chief ordered him to leave the area, but he denied vehemently that he was the one who was seen desecrating a grave. He, being Semshashi, or Semushashi, said that the chief should enlist the services of witch hunters, popularly known as Sikmantadas, to come and sniff out the witch, saying if Sikmantadas catch someone else, he would take the villagers and the chief to task. Now, says here that the businessman's wife, Bessie, who works for a safari company, said that I heard that police officers and villagers saw strange things at our homestead when police were investigating a case of dogs which died mysteriously. I will no longer stay with him because he has been caught digging a grave of my younger sister. He ran away and left shoes at the gravesite. The issue did not go down well with my parents. The matter was taken to Chief Nelkoba, and after a full trial ordered us to vacate the place, but my husband refused to leave. The husband says that there is no goblin that they saw. I even advised village head and former counselor, my father-in-law, and other villagers to enlist the services of the Tecumundas to root out such goblins. I told them that if they fail to root out such invisible things, they have to give me a beast. So I guess I got to give them like a cow or a horse or something along that line. He's even denied digging the grave, saying he told the chief that I won't leave because I'm not a witch and that they have to look for the Tecumundas or Sikamundas, who will name and shame the person who was seen digging the grave. I will not leave. I will stay here. Now, the reason I tell y'all all of this and the reason I bring this up.
Because it's awesome.
One is because it's awesome. But two, the two-parter here, okay, is this. I know that a lot of people, and by a lot of people, I mean most everybody, you get these ideas whenever people think differently of you, like, oh, well, they're a little more backwards. They're not quite, you know, first world, second world, third world country. You know, there's different beliefs like we've talked about with all the stuff that was said in Russia with the gay demons or whatever that they talked about. Right.
Now, yep.
You hear all these crazy stories, right? My question to you with these goblins is, what if, as we progressed from like as we've leveled up, let's say, and more people have kind of gotten and we're a little more advanced here, whatever. What if goblins are real? What if the shamans over there are real? And as we've gone, we've forgotten how to do it. Or as we came to the new country, we forgot how to do all this. And that's truly a thing. Like I'm the crazy guy. There really are these evil spirits. And maybe these people could, because
I know what you're saying. It's easy for us Westerners
to poo-poo on the
traditions of another culture so far away. But you're right. Maybe they do have the ability to conjure these goblins and, you know, rule over them like pets and stuff. Maybe it's not that far-fetched.
I bring it up because I've seen video footage, as have you, and anyone listening can go look it up. You want to see some wild stuff, look at some of the things that they've done with thermal imaging on like Shaolin monks, where they can create heat in their hands.
Chi. They can focus their chi.
Yeah, like they can do, and then years ago, maybe we should revisit that too. Years ago when I discussed about the long striders and the fact of like the dudes went for like 30 years and never ate and stayed in the caves. You remember all the dudes running? All of these crazy stories like that coming from like Nepal and all this with these monks. How come that, if that's a thing, how come there's not, like, there's dark magic? We know as well as anybody else after playing a little tabletop role play that there's bright, you know, white magic and dark magic. We've all talked to, maybe this is a thing, right? Maybe there's just middle magic, and middle magic is just to kind of help you out, right? Like, maybe he's got these goblins to help him. Maybe the goblins killed the dogs trying to get him off his place. He got tired of stepping on slippery leaves or something like that. In the poo, right? Nobody was picking up their poo.
Yeah.
So he sent the goblins out there, and the goblins, they don't listen too well because Well, they're goblins, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They killed the dogs, and he was like, I didn't want you to kill them. I want you to scare them. And they were like, oh, we didn't. Well, that's one and the same. They're scared now, scared to death. And then that's the way it goes. So I don't know. I just tossed it out there because I like the idea of Zimbabwean goblins.
I love the idea of goblins and being able to conjure them. Now, didn't that used to be Rhodesia?
I think, yes.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's a pretty brutal war back then.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Well, if you have any stories you'd like to share with me and Cam, the listeners, do not hesitate. Email us at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com.
Word.
You can call the show 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD, B-R-U-D. And you can tell us your story and maybe it'll grace the airwaves. For anyone out in Los Angeles that's listening to us on an AM radio station, we're being rebroadcast down there now.
Howdy.
Glad that you're here. For everybody else, hope you're doing good. Cam, what do you got planned for your miserable weekends? It looks like it's going to be pretty nasty.
I don't know. I mean, I had all of these grandiose plans lined out of stuff I wanted to do, and then now nothing. So I don't know what I'm going to have going on. I'm sure we'll come up with something. I think one of my great nieces, she has a volleyball game. I think I'm going to end up going to go. We're going to go check that out. She's 7. So we're going to go watch all that. It's fun to watch them play because she's a wild child. Anyway, she's gone feral. Other than that, I don't really know. I mean, probably, well, we may have to go shoot indoor out there or whatnot. Do a little prep. Well, we can't because that's another tournament weekend on the indoor and I'm not prepared for shooting indoor yet. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I have no idea. What about you? You got anything cool going on? And don't say work.
No, I'm not. Let's see. I think we have a cookout happening at my house this weekend. Dalee's brother and sister and stuff are coming over. They don't live that far away from us. I don't even know what we're having, but I know we're doing that. And then Luke wants to go play VR again at the Sandbox place.
You were telling me about this.
It's pretty awesome, but it's also pretty pricey. So I don't know. I might have to talk him out of that. We went to Trader's Village and Luke bought himself an original Nintendo 64 and
he's been playing it.
He's been playing the heck out of it. So there's a game shop here in town that sells all those old games, and I can go down there and I can get those games for like $10.
He'll drop you like $30, $40 down there and then just be like, here, we're not playing VR.
Yeah, well, he wants to play GoldenEye, the James Bond game. I used to love playing that. So I'm like, dude, we're about to have some 1v1 matches.
Dude, you're going to be cheating.
Right?
You played too much of that. Y'all used to play all the time.
Yeah.
I remember that. There used to be a lot of beer drinking and a lot of 1v1 matches on GoldenEye.
Yeah, that was like the original Call of Duty, right? Long before. Yeah. Like
what would we split it up? Four screens? Wouldn't there four of us could play at once?
Uh-huh, yeah.
God almighty.
That was,
we were in our early 20s. There was a lot of beer consumed and a lot of hours killed trying to shoot each other.
Right. Well, let's not forget about our sponsors. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and to get the plan shipped to your door for free, you got to go to mintmobile.com.
For how much? For free. They ship it to your house for free.
They do. Go to mintmobile.com/expanded. Also,
y'all don't sleep on Athletic Greens, folks. I'm telling you, you're going to enjoy it. It's going to make you feel great. I feel like a monster on it.
Right? Right now, they're going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is go to athleticgreens.com/expanded. That's athleticgreens.com/expanded. That's about all the time we have for this episode of Expanded Perspectives. Thanks, y'all. Be safe out there. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.